repercussions have also hit your local progressive radio station, KPFK. No matter the amount, your contribution plays a vital role in helping KPFK sustain itself and achieve its goals. We genuinely appreciate your support. Your generosity ensures that KPFK will continue to thrive. Please take action now by calling us at 818-985-5735 or by visiting kpfk.org. Thank you.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
But we're at an impasse with everything else. It's not just about salary, but just funding other programs and staffing levels and things like that. And now the district is doing that usual thing they do before a strike where they pretend to not have any money. So they just voted to do some layoffs. I don't think they're actual layoffs. I think they're shifting people from the district offices back into schools, but they're spinning it in such a way like the district's poor and they're not poor. So.
Good memories are forever, said the dog on the tombstone. If you're living underneath the bridge, man, all roads lead to home. I got a hidden flask, I'm paid in cash, got a cross above my bed. You know, I hitchhiked from Chicago, and a man walked up and said, this is a union town, all down the line.
Good morning. This is KPFK's Working Voices, reminding you that KPFK is in our winter fund drive. And now more than ever, we're relying on you, our early rising Working Voices listeners, to keep KPFK speaking for working people. By supporting this show, we're asking you to become a member today or renew your membership now at kpfk.org or call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. I'm your host, Joe Ayala, president of NABIT CWA Local 53.
And I am your co-host, Kristen Parker, with the Montebello Teachers Association.
And in this morning's show, Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory speaks to UTLA rep and Granada Hills High School teacher Maria Aguera. Steve Zeltzer's labor video takes us to the latest postal worker strike in San Francisco. Enrique Sanchez from Spanish United brings us an interview with pro-Israel Democratic Party congressional candidate Dori Ben-Ami. And we have the latest strike and labor news with this week's Working Voices update. All this and more coming up this morning on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. This is Working Voices.
In our first offering this morning, Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory speaks to UTLA member and Granada Hills High School teacher Maria Aguera about the possibility of a pending UTLA strike.
This is Dan McCrory for Working Voices talking to Maria Aguera about a possible strike. Where do you teach, Maria?
John F. Kennedy High School in Granada Hills for Los Angeles Unified School District.
And what classes do you teach?
This year I'm teaching Algebra 1, Geometry, AP Psychology, and then I hold some of the PE, the athletic rosters, because I'm also the athletic director there at Kennedy.
Is that unusual to have all those hats to wear?
No, it's kind of a district thing. In LAUSD, the athletic director only gets 2 periods out of the classroom, so they usually teach 3 classes and then have a conference period.
What's going on with the possible strike?
Well, we came to an impasse again, just like we seem to do about every 3 years or so now. And we voted to authorize a strike overwhelmingly, I think 96-97% when we came back from winter break in January. So now we just sit and we wait. I know we agreed to medical benefits to that part of the contract because the district was trying to basically not give us a raise and start charging us for our medical insurance. But we got that part handled for at least 2 years, but we're at an impasse with everything else. It's not just about salary, but just funding other programs and staffing levels and things like that. And now the district is doing that usual thing they do before a strike where they pretend to not have any money. So they just voted to do some layoffs. I don't think they're actual layoffs. I think they're shifting people from the district offices back into schools, which might not necessarily be a bad thing, but they're spinning it in such a way like the district's poor and they're not poor. So
that seems to be going on statewide with all the school districts.
Yeah. So San Francisco just went on strike for the first time in like forever. They were actually only on strike a few days and they were able to get a relatively healthy raise. And they also earned medical benefits. They didn't have the medical benefits that we have here in LAUSD. So it was pretty successful for them. So for us, that was a good sight to see. The union is asking for quite a lot financially. We have a salary table that doesn't make any sense the way it's broken down, and they want to fix it finally. As a later, not later in my career, but mid-career, but I've been with the district for a long time, teacher, the only way I can make more money is to, if the district gives out a raise, to do other jobs on campus, which I've been doing, but I can't move up the salary table anymore because it kind of just ends in LAUSD prematurely in comparison to other school districts. And one of the things they're trying to do with the new salary negotiation is not just get a raise, but make it so that you don't stagnate after year 15, which is kind of what it's like now.
What's the cutoff date of the contract?
Oh, I think our contract expired at the end of last June. We have a tendency to negotiate after it ends. I could be wrong. It was either last June or next June, but we work without a contract so often that it doesn't even really mean anything anymore. But when we went on strike in 2019, I would call that like our real strike because it didn't have a set end date and things like that. I thought that's a once in a career activity. And then we went on strike again 3 years later. That was a solidarity strike with SEIU. We knew it was only 3 days. It wasn't as bad. This one doesn't look great. I know we're going to wait until after spring break so the district doesn't let it go through a break so they don't have to pay us. But
are you part of the bargaining committee? Because you seem to know a lot from rank and file.
Oh, no. I was when I worked for Birmingham early in my career. I was on the bargaining committee there when we became a charter school, and then we bargained our own contract in addition to the UTLA LAUSD contract. But I'm not actually super involved in the union. Who has time? Because we all work like 12 jobs other than teaching so we can pay our bills. But I do keep up on it. And it's just the price of everything's going up and our salary isn't. And I don't make bad money. But if you think about the hours I put in, and the things I do for my students and the amount of education I need to have and the fact that I still feel like I have to have a second and a third job on top of teaching, that's a problem. We're talking about it yesterday, and doctors and lawyers who have to go to school as long, doctors a little bit longer than teachers, you don't see any of them with side hustles or things like that. A lot of teachers I know do. Yeah, either tutor on the side or other things. Like, I legitimately have a second job that's 20 hours a week on top of the 8 billion hours a week I'm already at work because of all the things I do there. And that's no fun.
So yeah, side act, what are you doing?
Yeah, I write online curriculum for a charter school, which is really fun, actually. I'm really enjoying having time to put together curriculum. I feel like I don't have time to focus on curriculum that much with the school district, certainly not in any way where we'd be compensated for it. So that's been a good experience.
On a personal level, what would make this next contract a success to you?
Oh, I mean, if we could just keep pace with the cost of living, that would be really nice. I really would like them to figure out the salary table. Basically, it goes up every year. Years 1 through 15, and then based on the number of units you have. But after year 15, they have these things called career increments. And once you get into the career increments, you get a raise every 5 years, but it's like the saddest of all raises. It'll be like $700. And it's just, there doesn't seem to be any benefit to sticking around in the school district. So I would like to see them fix that since I have, you know, 18, 19. More years to go.
How can parents and other listeners to our program support your efforts?
Reach out to your school board officials, reach out to the media, when we have our rally. I want to say it's on March 18th. Come out to the rally, support us at the rally. If we indeed go on strike in April, be out there with us. And the parents were great last time. It's a great organization called Parents Supporting Teachers that was kind of birthed out of that first strike. And they're very active. I love it because they watch all the school board meetings, which we can't watch because we're teaching when they're happening. And they take great notes about what's going on. And that's how we, a lot of teachers are able to keep up with it. But just being a part of organizations like that and reminding teachers that they're supported. We're certainly not like trying to be rich. We're all just trying to survive. And if we could all work a little bit less on the side, we could be much more effective in our main jobs. And just thank yous from the parents. That's always nice.
Very good. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Anytime.
That was Working Voices executive producer Dan McCrory speaking with UTLA member and Granada Hills High School teacher Maria Higuera about the possibility of a pending UTLA strike. For more information about the UTLA, you can go to their website at utla.net.
This is Stanley Clark. Free Speech Radio can't survive without your generous support. Become a KPFK sustaining member now by pledging $1 a day at kpfk.org. Become a sustaining member. Your donation is tax deductible and membership has its privileges. I am a member, so join me, Stanley Clark, in keeping independent radio alive. Donate to KPFK at kpfk.org and do it today.
So, it's that time of year again. I'm Hal Lohr, your associate producer for Working Voices here at listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. But before we begin, I have to tell you, being here at KPFK can be a humbling experience. I mean, these airwaves have carried the voices of Noam Chomsky, Cesar Chavez, Lena Horne, Nelson Mandela, Betty Davis, Fidel Castro, Dick Gregory, Bettina Aptheker, Joan Baez, and that list just goes on and on and on. And here's a guy like me broadcasting on those same public airwaves that carried their voices, asking you to support the same station that carries that spirit. Public airwaves that are threatened today by both a federal administration shamelessly working to silence all voices of opposition and a spineless for-profit U.S. media that has become so completely subverted by corporate interests and fears of federal reprisal that they've become little more than cringy propaganda outlets for a grossly out-of-touch two-party federal system. But that's not KPFK. And facing an uncertain future, independent broadcast media and the otherwise unheard voices it brings you are more important now than ever. So we need your support. Go online at kpfk.org or go to our phone lines at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. And if you haven't already, please become a member of our Sustainer Circle and join the KPFK family by donating what you can to this iconic LA radio station. Radio voices with a history of resistance to whitewashed propaganda, dedicated to the truth, and broadcast over the most powerful FM transmitter in the western United States. And with Los Angeles being the epicenter of federal crackdowns on everything from immigration to electric cars, think about how critical free and independent public radio for Southern California just might be, for real. We're talking Radio Free California here. So please, go online at kpfk.org and donate now. A little pocket change to help us keep KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles on the air. And thank you for listening and for your support for this show. 90.7 KPFK
Los Angeles. In our next segment, Enrique Sanchez from Spanish United Radio interviews special guest Dori Benami, who is running for Congress in California's 32nd District, a centrist Democrat candidate who favors fighting anti-Semitism through strong U.S.-Israel relations as part of a pro-immigration platform.
Welcome to Spanish United Radio. I'm your host, Enrique Sanchez. This afternoon, we have a very special guest. Would you be kind enough to introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Hi, my name is Dori Benami. I'm running for Congress in the United States House of Representatives in California's 32nd Congressional District, and I live in the San Fernando Valley in Tarzana, California.
Welcome. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Enrique.
It's my pleasure. We'd like to know a little bit more about your background, why you're running for Congress, and what changes you want to bring to San Fernando Valley.
You know, I'm in business. I grew up in the film business. My father is a movie producer. I always took an active interest in politics because my dad made a movie when I was 17 in Arkansas, and he met Bill Clinton, and I started working for the Democratic Party in 92 and was always kind of active whenever there was a presidential election. I would go to Florida or something and get involved. And, you know, I never thought that I would run for anything until I saw the Democratic Party move in such a frightening way away from Israel and away from the center.
The Democratic Party has shifted more towards the left. How can the Jewish Israeli community can make an engagement with the Hispanic community so that way they could see them as allies and not as adversaries?
First of all, I think we are natural allies. I'm married to a Colombian. My daughter is Latina, and we are proud to speak Spanish, Hebrew, and English in our household. And I'm proud to have you as a guest in our home to record this interview today. And so when you talk about anti-Semitism, you're really talking about ignorance and Jew hatred. It's really Jew hatred, and all hatred comes from ignorance. And so I would like to focus on things that connect people and that help connect as opposed to divide. Because what we're seeing right now in the political landscape, in the media, is a very harmful emphasis on division between different cultures. Mm-hmm. I see us very united. I love the name of your show, Spanish United. Mm-hmm. We as Jews should be united, as Americans should be united, as peace-loving people, we should be united. But there's a lot of ignorance, and there's a lot of, let's call it jihadi infiltration that has infiltrated into the American dialogue, into the European and Western dialogue. And it's filled people with misinformation, lies, and basically people in the West have normalized parroting terrorist propaganda. And I find that offensive and troublesome, and I won't traffic in that kind of rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what the Democratic Party needs. It's a party that's suffering from too many that will insult and injure the reputation of Israel and Jews throughout the world.
As far as you becoming, you know, running for Congress, like, what are your positions in terms of helping the Latinos or just within your district to have better access to better housing, better wages, better access to education, and better governance in general?
Listen, in California, we're seeing a decline overall. This state was the fourth biggest economy in the world. Now it's the fifth. This state had a surplus. Now we owe money. We see tons of waste, fraud, and abuse. We see schools that have lowered enrollment. There's a homeless crisis, and there's a burglary epidemic. Mm-hmm. So all people are being affected by this, not just one community, but Hispanics as well. And so all of those things concern me, and I think that it's because we're too used to failed leadership and accountability. We're too used to not having urgency or passion when it comes to people who are leading. And, you know, that concerns me greatly, and that's one thing that I think it's necessary for people to expect for government to provide the basic security and services that every taxpayer and citizen deserves. If you want to talk about immigration, I'm happy to talk about the immigration issue specifically because mm-hmm. I'm an immigrant. My wife is an immigrant. And I live in the San Fernando Valley, which is 110,000 undocumented people. Mm-hmm. It's 35 to 40% of the people who live here are immigrants from mm-hmm. various countries around the world.
Right.
And we're very proud of our heritages and our affiliation with wherever we're from. and we all can live very happy together. But the one person that doesn't get blamed, the one entity that doesn't get blamed in the theatrics between the war between California and Washington is Congress. Congress has had 30 years to resolve asylum problem and immigration problem in terms of how we fund it and fix it, in terms of the reality.
Right.
But, and the war over the border turns out that we didn't need to beef up security in the border because sex trafficking and drugs was entering the country.
Right.
And I think the Hispanic community especially is interested in the United States having a tough and secure border and for legal immigrants not to be, not to be tarnished by the reputation that illegal immigrants have. And right. So, I stand with immigrants and people who seek freedom. But if people have broken laws, then we need to figure out how to deal with those people if we can't just deport all of them. And I don't think we can. We live in California, and every household here in this area where I live in has a connection to somebody who's not documented.
Right.
And these people are placing, they're living in the shadows, and they're placing a burden on the healthcare system, on the education system. And we need to treat human beings with dignity.
Right.
And that's a principle of this campaign and my philosophy in general in life is we have to treat human beings and animals with dignity. And when it comes to every problem that we are dividing ourselves over, we need to find a way to come together. And that is what I'm trying to be about. We have a great divide even in Hispanic culture when it comes to looking at the world. And so it's not just happening in America where people are using outside circumstances to hate on people. And to use terrorist information and propaganda to smear people. And this kind of bully mentality is not good for the world. We don't need this. We need people like you who are thoughtful and who do something and take action. I find the hypocrisy to be unbearable. And that's what inspired me as somebody who wasn't in politics before this to get into it. And the reason that I ended up marrying a Colombian was I was in the shoe business, and I was making shoes in Peru and in Colombia. Oh, wow. And I was traveling there for, since 2014. Before that, I was in China. And
did you own a factory in
Peru? We worked with several factories in Lima and then later in Medellin.
Okay.
My wife is from Medellin. And did import-export of shoes to the United States and sold at various stores in the United States, Anthropology and stuff like that. But the shoe business was killed by tariffs. My connection to the Democratic Party was seriously threatened by October 7th. And the reaction afterwards. Mm-hmm. So all these things are things that inspire my candidacy and inspire what kind of role I want to serve in the public.
Yeah, you actually mentioned a couple things. I know that aside from the Islamist jihadist propaganda in Latin America, there's also the blood libel. And a lot of Hispanics in Latin America, believe that the Jews control everything in Latin America, and that causes a resentment.
In the past, there's tropes, and then there's lies, and then there's violence. And so what is my job if I'm elected to Congress? It's not just to legislate. It's also to communicate and advocate. And I'm not seeing enough of that from Jewish Democrats. And I'm disappointed. If the best Democrats we have in pushing back are Richie Torres and John Fetterman, who are not Jewish, then I must, as an Israeli-born American, I must try to change the nature of the Democratic Party and stand for something. And so this is what I'm going to stand for.
Would you lobby or submit a bill to put Hispanophobia to try to protect Hispanics from being attacked by hate crimes?
Listen, I don't know all the statistics. I just know that Jews are the number one target of religious hate crimes, and Blacks are the number one target of racial hate crimes.
Right.
And I don't know the statistics. Whatever the case may be, this is not something we should be proud of, and we should fight tooth and nail to stop the ignorance and stop the violence towards all communities, especially my friends in the Hispanic community who I love. Mis queridos amigos, mi familia, yo te deseo solo salud y que Dios te bendiga. De mi corazón, I'm really, really saddened by any kind of violence or hatred towards any people, but when it affects the people that we are proud to live with here in the San Fernando Valley and who I grew up with and who I feel so much affection for, it really makes me sad. And so I just want to say that I'm going to pray for peace amongst all people, and I'm going to work very hard for truth and for security for our families and for this community. There's nothing that's more important than that. And I just wanted to point out that my website is doryforcongress.com.
That was Enrique Sanchez from Spanish United. For more interviews, videos, and information from Enrique Sanchez, you can go to his Spanish United YouTube channel, or you can find him at the Spanish United webpage. For more information on Dory Benami, you can find his website at doryforcongress.com.
Everybody knows the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with the fingers crossed. Everybody knows that the war is over. Everybody knows that the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight is fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
You're listening to Working Voices on KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Once again, I'm Hal Lohr, your associate producer for Working Voices, and because it's fun drive time, before we go back to this morning's Working Voices show on listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, I'm going to remind you that without programs like KPFK's Working Voices, the only media narrative you hear are what America's corporate owners want you to hear, so the only choices you'll get are the ones those owners will allow you to have. So please, pick up your phone and call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735, or better yet, go online at kpfk.org and donate to this one-of-a-kind LA station. Even better, talk to your friends about KPFK and the importance of listener-supported non-corporate radio, because you can become a member of our sustainer circle by donating $25, $50, or $100 and join the KPFK family. And yes, remind people that radio like KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles is the only real place for working voices like yours. That being said, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, and particularly this Working Voices program, need to ask for some support from those very unions, associations, and organizations that this station and its Working Voices program have dedicated themselves to representing. Simply put, KPFK's Working Voices has stood strong in solidarity with working people and the unions that represent them, and now we're asking if those unions, associations, and organizations can find a way to stand in solidarity with the hardworking people that bring you this program. So once again, you can contact KPFK at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735, and they'll be happy to direct you on helping us keep listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles and this Working Voices program on the air. Or go online at kpfk.org. That's kpfk.org, and contact the station there. Because really, with everything that's going on in Southern California that America's corporately owned media chooses to ignore or turn into federal propaganda, Who else other than KPFK would even consider allowing a program like Working Voices to walk that broadcast picket line in solidarity for working people on the radio? Please go to kpfk.org and do what you can to keep these listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles airwaves independent and free. Because seriously, look at the state of America's corporately owned and or what remains of the federally subsidized media, and think of the alternatives.
A working class hero is something to be here.
This morning, Steve Zaltzert from his Labor Video YouTube channel takes us to Harry Bridges Plaza in San Francisco as part of last week's National Day of Action for a contract with NALC letter carriers to hear what demonstrating postal workers had to say.
My name is Mandy Marina, and I'm branch president of 1280. We cover San Mateo area, about five cities.
And what are the issues that postal workers are facing, letter carriers?
Well, we want a new contract, and we want to increase our wages, fair wages, especially in this area that is so expensive, and nationwide too, because this is a contract that is going to be nationwide. Yes, and also workers' conditions to improve that.
What are the working conditions?
Staffing. Getting more workers and help us to move the mail faster. And
I heard there's a high turnover. I mean, living in the Bay Area, like $200,000 a year people should be making. And what's the average wage of a postal worker?
The average, well, they're starting about right now about $21 or something, the hours, and the average is about 30. The top is about 40, you know, that range, yeah. But it's kind
of... What's the cost of a house, the rent?
Oh, right now, like in San Francisco, I heard that in the studios, well, you're talking about $5,000 or more. And now the houses is unbelievable. That even the smallest houses, you're talking about billions, $1.5 million, $2 million, $3 million. And if you go out... like South San Francisco and the Bay Area, you know, you start like a billion, you know, million point five, you know, easy.
So where do postal workers live? How can they have a family?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the other thing, that in this area, they're coming from outside, and it's very, very hard to live in this area and work in the same place because it's too expensive. And they come from other, you know, from outside, you know.
A lot of them have to commute to the Bay Area?
Yes, yes. A lot had to do that, yes. Yes, and that's you know, that's a lot of pressure for, you know.
From, on the road.
Yeah, oh, well, yeah. I'm facing that every day, you know, just the traffic, you know, and be on time to work and all of that, yeah. So we're working to fix that, you know. And with a better, you know, with this contract negotiation, we are looking in some of this issue that we have.
Well, that's a nice handmade sign. Did you make that?
I did make it, yeah. I made it last night. Thank you.
Are you a postal worker?
I am, yeah. I'm a mail carrier.
Can you talk about why you're here today?
I'm here because, you know, it's competitive with overtime right now at a lot of stations, and it shouldn't be like that. It's
what does that mean, it's competitive with overtime?
Well, people depend on overtime. So, you know, I depend on overtime. It's a good job. I love this job. It's just like if we could get paid a living wage and just do 8 hours without, like, you know, paying our life away, working our life away, that would be so awesome. And, you know, with the demand, the high demand in overtime and the lack of it sometimes, it creates a hostile work environment, you know, because this is our life. Like, this is our livelihood. We need to work to survive. And if we could just do 8 hours every day, that's already a lot, you know. If we could just have a living wage, then I need to be out here to support that. In San Francisco, I do hear that there's a high turnover. It's hard work, and when you start as a PTF, then they kind of push you to work as much as possible. And what I noticed too lately is, like, there's overtime work, but it's always going to the PTFs, and I'm not sure why that is, but it's just they get priority over, like, Sunday Amazon deliveries. And, you know, I've tried to come in on those days, but they use the PTFs instead. And it's fine. Like, they get their work, but they're not happy doing it a lot of the time either. But it's they don't.
Shouldn't that be by seniority, overtime?
That's what I'm thinking. And a lot of the time it is, but it's those days, like Sundays, that they are forced to work. It's like they don't have a choice, you know, but a lot of people want to work those days and they don't get priority because PTFs. I'm not sure why it is exactly, but, you know, it shouldn't be like that.
And I've heard that some carriers are homeless. Is that true?
I wouldn't doubt it. I've considered it even. I've considered living in my car. It's just I have a dog, so it's not really feasible for me. But that is probably the best way to save money and work this job. I wouldn't doubt people do that.
And you think this rally is going to have an effect? You think it's going to educate people?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because this place gets a lot of traffic. So, you know, it might wake somebody up to realizing, oh, mail carriers probably aren't getting paid enough in San Francisco. Of all places, you know, like that's where they need a lot of support.
Keith Brown. He's our executive officer for the Alameda Labor Council. He's going to give you a few words of support.
When postal workers are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back. Thank
when the you. Post office is under attack, what do we do?
Fight back hell.
That's right. So I'm proud to be here today to fight like hell with you, our letter carriers. And I have just so much respect for the work that you do for our communities. And one thing I have to say, my grandmother worked for the post office, the United States Postal Service. She was with the APWU Union, but it was through the U.S. Postal Service that my grandmother got a good paying union job, which has been important for so many people in this country, in particular African Americans. So I'm here to stand in solidarity with your fight for a fair contract. We need to support our public institutions like the United States Postal Service and to stand with the workers. To stand here with the workers.
Yeah. With the carriers.
Stand with the carriers. And again, we will be out here to fight like hell to make sure that you get the contract you deserve. Thank you so much.
My name is Lawrence. I'm here to support my union in the next round of negotiations, which hopefully won't take as long as the last ones.
And are you concerned about the government, federal government, basically taking away the rights of 800,000 federal workers? Do you think it'll have an effect on your negotiations?
Probably. They just seem to keep pushing against any kind of collective bargaining agreement that they already agreed to. They just want to roll it all back.
They don't care about the contracts.
Yeah, they don't care about anything. They care about their profits, and that's it. In terms of the Postal Service, people continue to talk about it as if it were a private business or a public business, but it's not a business. It's a public service. It's been enshrined in the Constitution for 250 years as a public service. It's not supposed to operate at a profit. It's not supposed to have shareholders. I mean, it's a totally different model of how things get done, and it drives them crazy because they want everything to be privatized with a bottom line.
Yeah. And are you concerned about these techno-fascists running the government, Elon Musk and these people, and what they're doing?
Yeah, of course. They have no no care for working people. They just see us as resources.
My name is Bradford Lewis. I'm president of the National Association of Letter Carriers from all the stations from Daly City up to Novato, jump over to Redwood City, and then over the bay to San Leandro.
Now, this is a National Day of Action. What is this about for the postal workers?
Our contract negotiation is open.
Look up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Our contract negotiation is open on February 25, so all across the country, we're holding a rally on February 22 to ask the public support us so that we can get a better pay and not have carriers, too many, living in their cars while they go out to deliver mail to everyone's homes and their businesses.
So you're saying that carriers are living in their cars who are working for the federal government?
We have carriers that are working in their cars, yes. This is San Francisco, and we don't have an accelerated pay for our workers here. Okay, we've been looking for locality pay, but it hasn't come up.
And there's an effort by the Trump government to get rid of federal workers to say that they don't have a contract. Are you concerned about effort to privatize and also get rid of the entire Postal Service?
To put the Postal Service under the Department of Commerce? I am. However, I know it won't happen because the members in Congress say, I'm all for it, but not in my district, you don't. There was letter carriers are federal workers. Actually, they're hybrid. 1972, they still went on strike. And there's a famous line where they went to President Nixon at the time and said, hey, they're federal workers. They can't go on strike. And he said, yeah, what do you want me to do? Put them in jail? The public would hang me. Because we are the very fabric of the community. We're the ones that watch families grow up and have their own families, their futures. We're the ones that are there every day. We're the ones that are trusted to have keys to their apartment buildings, their homes sometimes, their offices, their buildings. Life isn't even normal if you don't go out and see a letter carrier or a mail truck go by. Think about it. It just doesn't happen.
And how many cities is this action taking place?
Every major city in the country. Every major city in the country. And a few small ones, too. You're not left out.
And what about the other unions? I mean, do you have a united front of APW and the other unions that are facing the same kind of cutbacks?
Unfortunately, APW already got their contract settled, and we did break apart at one time. But our last national president prior to the current president, who hasn't been able to do it yet, but past president, Fred Rolando, he was working on that very strongly. So we're still looking for that vision to bring the four unions back together again.
Well, that helps the company if they're divided. They can get one against another.
It would help the company tremendously. There's one thing I'd like to add, which is very unusual. We once sat down and came to understand that if every manager, supervisor, postmaster, district manager were caught on a bus on the Bay Bridge coming back from a conference and they couldn't get in here in the morning, the mail would go out delivered just like it is every single day.
And there's an effort to get rid of mail-in ballots. Are you concerned about the attack on the democracy, the right to have ballots and mail them in?
I believe that mail-in ballots are a good benefit for the public. I don't think, again, it will happen because it's a nice slogan, but if you get no support, there's a certain point that we've come to understand that the public will not go. And one thing they will not touch of all federal workers are letter carriers. That's part of their community. They watch their families grow up. They come out of their community. It's one of the few blue-collar careers that's left in the country.
Well, some of the postal workers have said that there's a very high turnover as a result of the wages not being high enough. What is the turnover in the post office in NALC?
It is high, very high.
How high is it?
I'm going to go back and comment because we finally have a pretty decent postmaster, a pretty decent district manager. So for right now, we have more staffing than we've ever had in years. So we're looking to change that in the Bay Area. And I'm hoping if we get that done, that we can be referred to as a model for the rest of the country.
And what can people do want to support your struggle to get a contract and strengthen the post office?
Call their congressional representatives and their senator and say, we need letter carriers back in our community. We see nothing against the other delivery drivers or the other companies, but we see them occasionally. The letter carriers, again, they're there every day. They've proven that they can deliver our internet commerce in the most economic and efficient manner and reliable. Reliable.
And Amazon, UPS have been sending some packages through the post office. Is that, how's that happening?
A lot of them, when they rely on the Postal Service. They have what's called a last-mile contract. They can't afford to deliver to the rural areas and a lot of times to inner city. So they exist also with our presence. They couldn't exist without us. They try to take the cream off the top, but that leaves everybody on the bottom exposed. We're here to serve everybody. There's no discrimination. I will say one good thing also about the Postal Service, which people don't really think of. They have probably the largest diversity of employees in the country. And we're all one family. Like I said, we're careers. We're not jobs. We're 30, 35, 40 years.
Are you worried about the rise of fascism in this country?
I hope that democracy stays because it's good for the country and good for this population.
What would it mean for the unions if you had a fascist regime?
The unions help to represent a balance in the structure of labor and the structure of the economy. Without unions, there would be no balance.
There have been calls by Sarah Nelson, who's head of the airline flight attendants, called for a general strike. Brandon Johnson of Chicago called for a general strike around ICE. You think there's a movement growing in this country for a general strike?
There could be, but remember, we're federal workers, so we're barred legally from striking. We don't have the legal right to strike.
Well, in 1970, there was a general
Minneapolis,
strike.
However, in Minneapolis, once again, it was letter carriers who said, if you can't come out of your home, don't worry, we'll get it to you. Put it on our door, and we'll get it to your door. And if you want to give us your keys, we'll put it in your house if we have to. We're there every day to serve the community.
So the letter carriers in Minneapolis were supporting those parts of the community that were under attack by ICE?
They were supporting anyone who didn't have access to the delivery services that they need in order to maintain their life.
Dar Wilkinson.
And you're here today at a rally for postal workers. What's going on with the postal workers?
We're trying to protect the Postal Service so we can be around here for another couple hundred years, hopefully.
What kind of attacks are you facing?
Economic, mostly. The cost of living has gotten so bad in this country that your average postman is borderline homeless at this point. I've known postmen who actually live in their car, who've actually lived in their car on site and off site, who have to bathe at the post office in the restrooms because they can't afford to have their own place, not even an apartment, and take care of children and whatnot.
Is there a high turnover?
Oh, it's insane. I don't even, you know, when I first started about 20 years ago, I used to introduce myself and really try to, you know, let people know that they were welcome and, you know, get to know them, and now they're gone within a week. So it's like I don't even bother to say hello. It's, you know, it's like I already know they're going to be gone within a couple weeks, and it's unfortunate.
They can't survive.
They can't. They can't. They see what they're getting, you know, what they're netting, and with the costs out here, it's impossible.
And are you concerned about privatization? There's an effort to even shut down the post office, turn it over to private companies?
Oh, that would be the death. That would be one of the deaths of America as we know it, I believe. I've always been proud of what we do and the fact that we are ensconced in our nation's history, and I think it's really important on many levels. And if we lose the post office to privatization, I think that's the beginning of the end of this country, to be quite honest.
A lot of people do their ballots through the mail. There are a lot of serious things that a private company wouldn't be able to do.
That's true, and I take a lot of pride in that. To me, you know, every single piece of mail that we get is important. People like to talk about junk mail and whatnot. I don't believe there's one single piece of junk mail. I've seen every single thing that we deliver is important, and none more so than ballots. I think it's a sacred oath, and I'm, you know, I would protect it with my life if I had to, quite frankly.
And there's an attack on federal workers. The government, Trump government, said that taking away bargaining rights. What do you think about that? What should federal workers do, and what should people do to defend federal workers?
Well, you know, that's a huge question. I think that people need to understand that we are our brother's keeper, and I truly believe in that. And if we can't take care of each other and have compassion for what's going on, then eventually it'll be our turn to lose something, and we won't have somebody there for us.
And the other unions, are they uniting together at the post office? Because it seems like they pit one union against another.
To be honest with you, there really isn't any kind of brotherhood when the unions are concerned. There is no intermingling. I don't know why that is, quite frankly. It's probably by design. You know, it's easier to manipulate individuals when you separate them.
You're working for the same company.
Yeah, That's true. But, you know, many people have different goals. To me, it's not about financial gain, more so than, like I said, I've always wanted to be a carrier. You know, I've have a lot of pride in what we do and why we do it. Some people just look for the dollar, but to me, it's we're ensconced in this nation's existence, and for me, that's more important.
And you have a Havana shirt on. What does that say?
It says that I have compassion and empathy for people that are suffering needlessly because they didn't do anything. They have a home that was given to them by the universe, by God. And they should be in control of their own destiny. I don't know any Cubans that are trying to harm me or ever have tried to harm me. Or any Vietnamese for that fact.
If there's a blockade now, they're stopping oil from going to Cuba. What does that mean for the people of Cuba?
Unfortunately, a lot of people are going to die, most likely by disease. It's unfair. And I don't see anything in the mainstream media about it. Conveniently, I know that as a kid in the 70s, this would have been all over the place. You know, this would have been outrageous. But people have been so desensitized to what's going on over, let's say, in Palestine. And you know, you have tens of thousands of people just slaughtered, and nobody seems to really give a damn. So this is going to be our Gaza, I believe, in the Western Hemisphere if we don't do something about it.
Okay, thank you. Well, what can people do to support the postal workers?
Love your mailman and your mail lady and your drivers, and show them a little sympathy, and maybe give them some water every once in a while when it's really hot out there.
My name is Michael. I work out of the Napoleon Street station. And, you know, I'm just here supporting, showing the cause that we're here for, which is, you know, a better contract and better pay, recognition, and, you know, things of that nature.
And safety, what are your concerns about safety?
Safety concerns is that we're quite understaffed right now, so we're all working very late hours, and just, you know, violence on postal workers. I know that we just recently had a postal worker pass away last week, so that's pretty sad.
What happened?
I'm not 100% sure. I believe that they were robbed and murdered on the scene. I'm not sure.
So they're getting targeted?
Oh, for sure. Targeted every day.
And the stress, that must be a lot of stress for postal work.
It's very stressful. It's constantly worrying about every day getting possibly attacked, either by a person, animal, or something, you know. But that's why we're out here, you know, to fight for a better contract and better recognition.
That was Steve Zeltzer from his Labor Video YouTube channel. For more videos and insights from Steve Zeltzer, you can go to his Labor Video YouTube channel, or now you can find him at the Production of Labor Video Project on the web at labormedia.net. And for more NALC letter carrier info, you can go to nalc.org.
What do workers get for pay? Hungry, broke, and thrown away. Hungry, broke.
Once again, I'm Hal Orr, your associate producer for Working Voices, and before we end this morning's Working Voices show, we need to remind you again that it's Fun Drive time on listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. I need to ask you an uncomfortable question. What happens if the public airwaves of stations like KPFK go radio silent? I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that after looking at what the federal government has done by cutting funding for public broadcasting and looking to weaponize the FCC, that silencing voices of dissent is part of their agenda. And once stations like KPFK 90.7 FM are gone, they don't come back. The station and its FCC licensing are usually sold off and picked up by a corporate media conglomerate. So if that isn't what you want, you need to act for KPFK. Go online to kpfk.org or go to our phone lines at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. And if you haven't already, please become a member of our Sustainer Circle and join the KPFK family by donating what you can to this iconic LA radio station. And maybe just as important for those ready to resist America's actions here in Los Angeles, we need you to help us. Become our activists too and spread the word about KPFK. Remind your friends that for the last 65 years, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles has been LA's voice of resistance to America's two-party corporate media echo chamber. A listener-supported radio station that doesn't have to answer to any federal government or corporate master. Radio Voices, with a history of resistance to whitewashed propaganda, dedicated to the truth and broadcast over the most powerful FM transmitter in the western United States. And with Los Angeles the epicenter of federal crackdowns on everything from immigration to electric cars, think about how critical free and independent public radio for Southern California just might be for real. We're talking Radio Free California here. So please, again, go online at kpfk.org, that's kpfk.org, or go to our phone lines at 818-985-5735, that's 818-985-5735, and donate now. And thank you for listening and for your support for this show. We never get paid what our labor is worth. That's why we often in a day's on the way to our work. And when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about.
Hi, this is Halle Berry, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM.
This is Working Voices Associate Producer Hal Lohr with this morning's Working Voices Update. It's official. More than 30,000 Kaiser Permanente healthcare workers ended their strike in California and Hawaii last week. As an estimated 31,000 registered nurses and other frontline Kaiser Permanente healthcare workers returned to work last Tuesday after a four-week strike in California and Hawaii to demand better wages and staffing. The United Nurses Association of California Union of Healthcare Professionals said in a statement last Monday that significant movement at the bargaining table prompted an end to the walkout, even though the union's still, according to the union, returning members to their patients and livelihoods is the clearest path to securing a final agreement and building on the progress achieved during the strike. Kathleen Campini Chambers, a spokesperson for Kaiser, said, "We are working with our teams to schedule returning employees over the coming days in an orderly way that protects patient safety and minimizes any disruption," citing that the two sides had come to an agreement on wage increases based on an offer the company first made in October, ending at least for the moment picketing that began January 27th and was marked as the second major strike in recent months by employees represented by the United Nurses Association of California Union of Healthcare Professionals Union. After a five-day strike in October had ended with negotiations resuming, but talks then had broken down in December.
And that's our show for this week. And once again, we're asking our labor partners, locals, and regional officers to seriously consider underwriting this show, because Working Voices and KPFK could really use your support. So please contact the station at 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org to explore the possibilities. We need to hear from you. Email your comments or questions to workingvoices@aol.com. Please contribute if you can at 818-985-5735. Once again, this is Joe Ayala, co-host Kristen Parker. Our thanks to Steve Zeltzer, Enrique Sanchez, Dan McCrory, Gary Scott, Hal Lohr, and of course our guests. Please continue to give what you can and keep us going. We're in this together. And of course, always remember to educate, agitate, and organize. Have a great week, everybody.
So much work, yeah, yeah.
Work, work, yeah, work, work.
I love KPFK. It's actually my favorite radio station, and the reason I love them is because they are bold and they are representative.
KPFK is a community-powered platform for bold ideas, local beats, and fearless journalism. No ads, no billionaire owners, just real, independent media sustained by you. We've been on the air 65 years. If you believe in what we do, now's the time to support it. Whether you're renewing your subscription or joining us for the very first time, it starts at a minimum of just $5 a month. Way less than a streaming subscription, but far more impactful. This is a membership drive. I'm Ace Estwick, and I serve on KPFK's local station board. Please call 8-